And it's about time for true crime.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm full.
Yeah, we just went to dinner with Mrs. Abel Dabelson.
Right?
She took a little trip out to New England just in time for a blizzard.
And Texas Roadhouse.
So there you go.
What else could you want?
What else is, I mean, truly, what else do you need, you know?
And she brought Garrett's. Which is so nice.
Which I just learned what that is today. Apparently it's popcorn. Apparently it's good.
It's so fucking good.
So this is from the Midwest?
Yes. Okay, you have a relic that. From my homeland.
Oh.
So exciting.
It's fitting it would be some kind of corn.
Oh, yes. It always is.
Yep. Well, I'm very excited to try it.
It's so good. It was so nice. And we never get to see her, like, just for funsies, but especially not on weeknights.
It's normally a FaceTime kind of thing with Mrs. Abel Dabelson, yeah. So it was very cool to just go to Din's.
And just hang, chill, hang. Talk. We also had a very eventful weekend in which a little Miss Someone got her wedding dress.
That she did.
It wasn't me. So.
That she did. It's becoming real. I'm getting married in the fall, if you're new here or if I didn't tell you. But all of those pieces are slowly coming together, and it's just this, like, it's stressful, but it's exciting. It's mostly exciting.
It's a very, like, magical time to see all of the ideas come to fruition. So I'm very excited about that.
I'm just like, no other pandemic. I can't. So many weddings got delayed, right?
Yes.
And, like, pushed back and everything. And so when we were booking ours, there were a ton of couples who had to delay or cancel, whatever it was, push things out, move things around. Or just decided not to do it at all and just waited till they were, you know. So it seems like everybody's kind of getting married this year. Everyone's kind of catching up from that lull of when we couldn't. I'm like, it will be my luck that there will be something else that'll happen.
I'm just going to knock on some wood.
So we're hoping and we're speaking it into existence that it's not going to happen and things are going to go great.
No, it's going to be so good. And honestly, even if something happened, which it won't. But even if it did, we'd find a way to make it great. So it's not going to be bad. And also, like, you're actually marrying someone cool.
I know. I really lucked out, huh?
Well, no, you have a good picker. I wouldn't call that lucking out.
I love him. I'm very lucky.
He's a good loser.
He is.
Yeah.
Abby likes, I should say this. He likes to call Abby loser.
Yes. And so. Then I adopted it because, bitch.
I don't think you guys even say each other's names. I think it's just loser.
It is really weird.
That's
like,
fine.
I don't think I'd ever see him and be like, hey.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Ugh.
I know.
Feels fake. Anyway.
It's just loser.
It's been a very nice, very exciting last week in the ATFTC world.
Yes.
How are you guys doing? How is that weird coworker? Are they smelly? Are they sitting next to you? Because mine is.
Mine's in my house. Can you imagine how I feel?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything.
Well, there you are, though.
Imagine being in your weird coworker's house. Anyway, I'm really excited to hear about today's.
Me too.
I've heard that it's intense.
It is. So I think we get into it.
Yeah, we should skippers. Get into it. Hello, skippers. Stop skipping.
Swiper, no swiping. Skippers, no skipping.
Pod is on, friends.
Hi, hello, and welcome. Or welcome back.
Hey.
To your favorite true crime podcast. If you're new here, it's foreshadowing. It will be.
Hey.
We are very happy to be hanging out with you. If you like what you hear, please do not forget to follow, download, rate, and review. It means the world to us, and it keeps us going. It helps us more than you know, and it's a free way to do it.
Yeah.
It's free 99, and that's the right price.
If you felt so compelled or so desired to, in our link tree down below, we do have a Venmo and a PayPal you could donate to if you wanted, but
it would take a fraction of the subscriptions we have to have access to all of our resource materials.
Exactly.
So, if you wanted to do that, feel free, but if not, you don't need to worry about it.
But if you didn't want to pay and you wanted to support us, BB, that like, that follow, that does it all.
Sharing it with somebody, leaving a review, I'm just saying.
Oh, the reviews,
it means the world to us.
Thank you guys.
But if you are new here, a bit about us. I'm Allie. Hey.
Hi, I'm Abby, and we do respond to both.
Correct. But Abby and I are actually two professionals working in the criminal justice field. We have a combined decade of education in criminal justice. Abby kind of studied more down the psych route, where I kind of went pre-law sociology route. we have thousands of worked hours in the field, and we've spent years of our friendship just kind of talking about true crime anyway. And then the pod was born.
When a mommy and a mommy love each other very much.
They sit down at the kitchen table and...
When a true crime nerd and a true crime nerd love each other very much.
Correct. We are the obnoxious mom friend.
Oh, yes.
The share your location friend, the text me when you get home, hold your hair back for you friend, don't forget to leave a strand of hair in the Uber friend, send a physical description of the guy you're on a date with so we can investigate friend.
And damn it, if nothing else, a partial plate. Thank you.
Thank you. I think there's a direct link between that and being interested and fascinated by true crime, and I don't quite know how to describe it, but it's there. We want to know what we can learn, how we can prevent what happened from happening again, and how do we support and move forward? How do we change? How do we not repeat history? So if that sounds like something you're interested in, you've come to the right place.
Hi.
And if you've been here for a while, thank you and welcome back.
And we love you guys. We really do.
Oh my God, we love you so much. Don't even... Today's case is a tough one.
Okay.
They all are. And like in every case, we put ourselves in the positions of the people that we're talking about, and we'll be doing just that again. But before we get too far ahead, I wanted to cite a few sources here. Ladysmith News, some Fox, some CNN, People.com, Time, a couple different YouTube videos, and they're all linked. You'll see them all. So anyway, if you want to look at the sources, you can certainly see them. Please, though, keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times, because we definitely have a bumpy ride ahead.
It's gonna be a bumpy ride.
It is, though. Today, we're talking about the Kloss family.
Okay. Like Karlie Kloss?
I don't know who that is, but sure.
Okay.
Maybe if it's C-L-O-S-S, then not related and probably not. But yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Cool. Just like that. Mm-hmm. So James Kloss, we're going to start with him. He was born September 25th, 1962 in Ladysmith, Wisconsin.
Okay. Ooh, a Midwest case.
Yes. I watched Fargo. What can I say?
We're going to the Cheesehead State.
Funny you mentioned that. We'll talk about it. We don't have a ton of background information on James or his wife, Denise, just except that James was an athlete in high school, and he did like to reminisce about the glory days, kind of back then. And he was a Wisconsin Badgers and Green Bay Packers fan. He loved watching sports. He married his wife, Denise Newberg, who then became Denise Kloss, on June 9th, 2003. Denise was actually 10 years his junior. She was born July 21st, 1972. By all reports, Denise was a sweetheart and a kind soul. She loved working with flowers and feeding her birds. She would help anybody without a second thought. Both Denise and James actually grew up in Wisconsin. And when they settled down and had their first and only child, Jamie, who was born in 2005, they were still happy in Wisconsin, but they moved to a town called Barron.
Okay.
The couple actually worked together at a place called Jenny O. Turkey Store.
Okay.
I don't know if that's something that you're familiar with, but depending on the sources, it was like the bigger corporation was like a cheese company or something like that. So that's why I kind of laughed. But I don't know if this was like a smaller mom and pop kind of shop that was owned by a bigger corporation, because you can kind of see different names in the sources. But either way, they worked together, and they actually worked together for 27 years.
That's wild. And just for anybody who might be new or doesn't know, I'm from the Midwest, so that's why we make all of the jokes like that. And I didn't say ugh because of him. It's just I'm a Bears fan, and the idea of rooting for the Green Bay Packers feels kind of gross to me. No offense. Full offense. And I don't know that company, but it does make sense. I mean, Wisconsin is like known for their cheese, but especially their cheese curds, which is wild. But anyway.
Have you been to Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Okay.
They do have great cheese. I mean, I'm not going to like that's an amazing quality in a place.
And for someone who's lactose intolerant to say that holds some weight, because if she's going to do it, like it's worth it.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be worth it.
Because she's going to pay for it. Wisconsin
cheese is always worth it.
There you go. By October of 2018, Jamie Kloss was 13 years old.
Okay.
So their daughter. She was happy, healthy, typical middle schooler.
Oh, good.
But not for long.
Damn it.
Jamie took off after her mom in a lot of ways. She not only resembled her in appearance, because she did look a lot like her mom, but she had that sweetness. It was like that sweetness was passed down to her.
Mm.
They were both kind of shy, but very, again, sweet and kind, religious. Denise was a very devout Christian. Jamie was too.
Okay.
Very thoughtful. Jamie and her mom, Denise, were described as two peas in a pod.
Aww.
And almost inseparable. And that really tugs at my heart, because at 13, that was me. And also in my 20s, that's still me.
Yeah.
I think I said it last episode too. I'm very fortunate. I like my parents. I think they're cool people. If they weren't my parents, I'd probably still want to hang out. I say probably.
Probably.
But like, may or may not hang out with them. No, but seriously. And it's a privilege to have parents that love you, that love each other, that value the family. And Jamie knew that, and she felt that. And she didn't have siblings, and she had aunts and uncles and other family that she was close with, and so she just had this kind of love and support surrounding her that is very, unfortunately, rare.
Yeah. And you got to appreciate where you got it. And honestly, I'm more impressed that she's 13 and already appreciates it. Like, to me, 13 is like, but mom dropped me off a block away from school. Like,
exactly. It's that she didn't have this defiant energy yet. Or, you know, if that was going to come, or maybe it wouldn't have. Maybe she just kind of like never got to the I hate you stage.
Yeah.
But she was just so sweet. And her and her mom would hang out all the time. And that's not to say that her and her dad didn't get along, because they absolutely did.
Right.
But when you're a teenager, or like preteen.
Yeah.
Like, your mom's your buddy, you know?
You're like, mom, what's happening? And she's like, oh, sweetheart, it's fine. We all go through that.
And so it was just this really sweet relationship they had.
Aww.
And I wish I could say that it stays like this. And
why do you never give me the stories of like, and then they loved each other.
And then they lived happily ever after, and everything was great.
I mean, I guess it's not a true crime podcast, but it'd be nice if we got one or two, you know?
It wouldn't suck, I'll be honest. But we don't live in the unicorn shitting rainbows kind of world. It's better there. It is. But unfortunately, we're in the real one. And in this one, the Kloss family went to bed the evening of October 14th, 2018, just like they had every other night before. But just after midnight, around 12:50 a.m. on the 15th, I guess, technically, James Kloss heard a noise coming from outside his house.
Oh, no.
And that was concerning, because he knew that his wife was asleep with him. His daughter was also asleep, and so he knew it wasn't them, so he got out of bed. And he turned on a light outside, and when he did that, he saw a man wearing all black and a ski mask with a shotgun in his hand.
Ugh!
The man had parked his vehicle at the end of their driveway, and when that masked man noticed James inside the house, he yelled at him to get on the ground.
Okay.
He said, like, get down, put your hands up, get down. And so James said, show me your badge.
Good.
Because this man is dressed in, like, tactical gear, essentially. He wasn't in a police cruiser, but you're thinking things so quickly, you just don't know. And he's saying, get down, put your hands up, get down. You assume it's some kind of law enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, I would.
So he says, show me your badge. And the assailant yelled to open the fucking door. So James did not do that. Because he didn't think that that's how that conversation would go if this were legit.
Right.
He had no idea who this person was. By this point, he kind of realized it wasn't a member of law enforcement, but before he could do anything else, the man aimed the shotgun and shot him in the head.
Oh my gosh.
James Kloss was killed instantly.
That's awful.
The commotion had woken up Denise and Jamie. And when they...
Oh, I hope that kid did not hear that.
Wait.
Oh.
When they approached, they could see James dead on the ground. So immediately, Denise sees her husband, the man she loves, has been with, and worked alongside 27 years. For all intents and purposes, his head was, like, shot off. Like a shotgun blast at close range.
Oh, yeah. It's not good.
Luckily, you know, the benefit of that is that James didn't suffer. Though it was very quick, but it was a very sudden attack. It seemed like it came out of nowhere. Nobody was expecting that. They didn't have any known enemies. Who was this man who's just now entered their home?
Right.
So this wasn't him standing outside anymore. He's inside.
Oh.
So Denise and Jamie walk in to essentially like the front room.
Right.
Where here's this man masked up. You can't see what he looks like. You just know he's there. And Jamie sees her dad dead. Not moving, obviously.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're terrified. And so Denise grabs Jamie and took her to a bathroom and she locked the door.
Okay.
And Jamie was crying and scared. Of course she was. She was a little kid. I mean, not little kid, but a preteen, but a teen. You know what I mean?
Well, and also, like, I'd be crying and scared in the bathroom. And I'm, like, a full grown-ass adult.
Like, she's 13.
Oh.
13. And her mom is obviously terrified, but her mom went into mom mode. Her mom's maternal instincts kicked in. So she grabbed Jamie, locked the door, sat with her in the bathtub, and bear hugged her. Like, with wrapping her body almost around her to protect her.
Yeah.
Like, get willing to give her life in an instant to protect her daughter.
This is gonna make me cry already.
I know. So Denise is trying to console her and comfort her and kind of keep her quiet because, you know, I mean, obviously he knows where they went, but I think they're just, what do you do?
Right,
you've got literally less than 15 seconds to make these decisions.
And in the middle of processing, like, oh, well, I'm a single parent now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how you do that.
Denise dialed 911.
So good.
That call came in at 12:53. So it's believed that James was shot at 12:50.
That's fast.
Or that commotion was heard at 12:50. So we're talking a span of 3 minutes.
Ugh.
Now, that phone call. There's a recording out there. It's been released. I'm not going to play it for you here, but if you want to find it, you can. And unless it's pertinent to the case, we typically don't include them just because they can be haunting in their own way.
And it's...
You know how we talk about or sometimes even play some of the calls where it's suspicious? There isn't anything suspicious about this that's going to impact the case later. I've listened to it. There's nothing decipherable. It is pure panic and chaos. There's screaming, screeching, loud noises and gunshots, and then the phone hangs up.
That's awful. And honestly, you guys, like, for some people that's enough, and like, I couldn't personally handle that phone call. And so usually if it's like, you can or you might not want to, we'll let you do that.
Like, if you want to look it up again, it's there.
Oh, that sounds so awful.
But I'm not going to play it for you. So again, they're screaming, shrieking. It's either Denise or Jamie. I think both. You hear a gunshot and the call ends. Dispatch had tried to call the phone back, but it went to voicemail. There was no answer. So this assailant killed Denise in front of Jamie.
In the bathroom?
That was the gunshot heard at the end of the phone call.
Fuck.
The assailant grabbed 13-year-old Jamie, duct taped her hands and ankles, and left her there.
Oh.
The 911 call disconnected, and when dispatch called it back, it went to Denise's voicemail.
Oh.
But dispatch was able to determine where the call came from, and the name on the voicemail was Denise, so they could kind of confirm, like, oh, it's this house, it's this, you know, location, this is where it came from. And they dispatched officers for a domestic disturbance. They didn't know what it was. Again, the phone call, there are no words. They just knew something terrible happened.
I can't imagine being the dispatch officer who has to pick that up.
Nope. But there's also, like, neighbors who, you know, like, people could kind of hear things. And so I think maybe other calls might have come in around that same time. But this was the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
The assailant brought Jamie out to his car, actually slipping in the blood of her parents on the way. Nearly fell on the ground because there was blood everywhere in the home by this point.
So now we just have this poor, sweet 13-year-old and this random tactical gear man who just killed both of her parents. One essentially right in front of her and the other one actually right in front of her.
Correct.
Ugh.
So as he's steering her and guiding her out of the home, and again, like, her eyes are covered, I think. Like, she's got her hands behind her back. She's got, like, her ankles tied together. It's this really weird way. So she's being guided through the house, also trying not to slip in her own parents' blood, right, mind you. And when he gets her outside, he puts her in the trunk of his car, and he drives away.
Nope. I'm out. What? Where are you going with her?
Oh, you'll find out.
I hate that I'm gonna find out.
4 minutes after the call was placed to dispatch, the first officers arrived on scene, which is incredible.
So fast.
4 minutes from the time the call was received to somebody being at the residence. That's pretty incredible. In an overnight shift, those are usually understaffed. You're kind of running like a light shift typically. Right, your busiest time's usually second shift.
Right. Well, and also people are freaking exhausted because anybody working overtime from second shift is like, oh, what a busy.
Yeah.
Or you're over on the other side of town dealing with the last call that you got in the last 5 minutes of your shift, because that's always when shit happens.
Always is.
Oh my God. That is impressive response time.
So 4 minutes is, I commend them for that. But what they walked into was a nightmare.
Well, yeah.
56-year-old James Kloss lay in a pool of his own blood as soon as they walked in. They found 46-year-old Denise Kloss in the bathroom, also dead from a gunshot wound. And then investigators searched the house because they didn't know who else was supposed to be there. Was anybody else dead? And that's when they learned that there was a
child.
There was a teenager.
Yeah.
There was a 13-year-old, but she wasn't there. What happened next was both horrifying but incredible at the same time. I physically cannot imagine the pain and the heartache that their loved ones felt. James and Denise were good people, solid, hardworking, loving people, and they were stolen from those who loved them in an attack that no one could understand.
No.
Everyone just wondered why. Why did it happen? Why them? Why now? And most importantly, where's Jamie?
Yeah, why are there only two of the three family members here? Which I know we know why, but that's so haunting for loved ones to find out and come in on.
A parent should never have to bury their kid. It goes against nature, no matter how old they are. But James Kloss's mother and Denise's father had to bury their children.
Ugh.
And they grieved for Jamie wherever she was, and they just prayed and hoped that she was okay. Their siblings, aunts, uncles, cousins all faced the grief and heartbreak in a public way because this was everywhere.
Right. That is an insane crime scene. Of course, it's going to be in every news source.
And it's a small Wisconsin town, and you have a double homicide and a missing teenager, and they didn't believe for a second that Jamie had anything to do with the crime. No. They knew for a fact she was taken from the scene. Like, you could see the footprints leading outside. Terrifying.
That makes me so sad.
And so, while what they experienced was a tragedy, something beautiful was born out of it too. And I have to look on the bright side, because if I don't, it'll kill me. So,
yep.
The bright side here is that every single person who could help did help.
Love that.
And the community came together because of the love that they had for Denise, for James, for Jamie. Classmates, friends, family members, acquaintances, other churchgoers, coworkers, colleagues, you name it, they were in it. And the main goal was just to bring Jamie home.
I love when that happens. I love the Midwest.
And there was something so horrific for the family that while they were grieving, Denise and James, it was like they didn't even have a moment to really let that set, to let that be, because there was still work to do. You couldn't rest yet. Like, you weren't done. You know, grief can often look like you're almost like frozen. Like, you can't move. You can't, like, you are sitting with the weight of what has happened. But they didn't have time for that. They couldn't just sit. They couldn't take a minute, because every minute that went by was a minute Jamie wasn't home.
Right. And they don't know if they're adding Jamie to the grief or if they're fighting tooth and nail to bring her home.
They have no idea.
Right.
So they're dealing with this in this public way where every news station, I mean, national news, this wasn't unique to, I mean, yes, obviously it was unique to Wisconsin, but like, everywhere was looking at this, because how does this happen? But the search was on.
Good.
And no one was resting until Jamie was brought home. Law enforcement worked alongside family and volunteers. They traced every single lead. Jamie's photo was plastered on every wall, a flyer on every street corner, a news segment every day about the continued efforts to bring her home. A tip line and email address were established for any potential leads or sightings to her case and her case only. So they had a whole like task force on this.
That is impressive.
This was a very focused effort to find her. Remember, we're in October here.
Okay. And soon, so it's getting cold.
Well, weeks passed and they weren't any closer to answers. It's getting colder. October had given way to November and Thanksgiving was approaching. On Thanksgiving, the loved ones of James, Denise, and Jamie had 3 empty chairs at the dinner table and no answers as to why.
Oh, shut up. I'm gonna cry.
Thanksgiving passed, and between Christmas commercials and holiday songs, the news coverage of Jamie's disappearance was still aired everywhere. And then Christmas arrived, and still nothing. But the community was still together. Hundreds of volunteers turned out for searches, or anything else that they might have needed. The company that James and Denise worked for posted reward money for information given to police.
That's amazing.
Like $25,000, I believe.
That's insane.
Because it was 2 of their employees. Over the holidays, home-cooked meals were made in large quantities and dropped off at the police station because they knew investigators weren't taking breaks in their search. They didn't get to have holidays at home. They worked around the clock looking for her, investigating every single lead, tip, potential sighting, rumor. I mean, they didn't have a choice. They followed everything to the end.
Right.
And so the community came together in ways that it was like, maybe I can't go out and search, but I can cook a warm meal.
I can do this. Yeah.
With lots of cheese.
Oh,
for
oh my
you to
gosh.
Be able to get through
the Midwest
what
casseroles. That's God's work.
You know? So as horrifying and terrible as it all was, and I don't mean to discount that at all, but the way the community came together is, you hardly see that. There's usually just like fucking whose dick's bigger competition swinging, and
yeah, which department can figure this out the fastest,
how we're gonna hide information from this one and this one, politics are involved, there's, you know, something or somebody, there's a cover up. I mean, you name it, it happens, and it has happened. And that's why so many of these things don't go well. I mean, there's a lot of reasons things don't go well, but when you have incompetent law enforcement investigators, it all goes to shit.
Yeah.
And this community had an excellent team of people that were truly passionate about this community and about bringing her home. Because for them, they had a daughter about Jamie's age. Or they knew someone who did. Or they remembered being her age and could understand how terrified she would be if she was out there. And they just knew they needed to find her.
You know, everybody has a niece or a nephew or someone that, God forbid, it's them in any way. And now, like, I know Allie and I talk a lot about how respect for human life goes beyond only caring about those people that you have a parallel for. Jamie is a person outside of whether or not you have a niece or a nephew or know a kid that age. But like, the way it pulls on your heartstring, where it's like, oh my God, I have a kid that age.
Right.
Like, and this could be us.
And a kid that young is pure. You know, we can find fault in adults, and we'll find flaws, and we'll point to things we don't like, and human nature is to victim blame and to point at things that probably don't matter. I mean, fill in the blank. Again, it can be any kind of possibility, but when you've got a kid as sweet as her and as pure as she was,
right,
you either know somebody or you wish you did like her.
Yeah.
In that way. You know what I mean? That's something that we should all be able to relate to, and there's a sweetness in that. And so when investigators were approaching this case, they weren't alone, because they had volunteers and there was family. And it wasn't to bring that girl home. It was to bring our girl home.
Aww.
Like, they all were just emotionally invested. Just invested.
Yeah.
So that's pretty incredible. So then we get through Christmas and we get through New Year's and we think, ah, shit, where do we go from here?
A lot of time.
Because it's been over 2 months.
Yeah.
And we don't have answers.
Do we have anything? Where are we in this investigation? Like, have the police gotten any other clues, leads, hints?
So they go through, they comb over every bit of information they can find on the parents. Unfortunately for them, they had no enemies. They were generally very well liked in their community.
It sounds like they're decent people.
Very close friends, family, co-workers. They didn't have an issue at work. They didn't have an issue with like a distant cousin or a weird uncle. They didn't have...
Must be nice.
They didn't have like exes with, you know, like they'd been together so long that it wasn't like, oh, well, this one's ex-wife and this one's ex-husband. Right. Like,
there's no like fresh vendettas or anything.
Yeah, there was no like mud in the water. They were just good, honest people. And so they poured over like every inch of their lives and they found nothing. So then it's like, okay, what about Jamie? Who hates Jamie? Who, you know, what could that be? Nothing there. Who hates another family member who would want to do that? So they're looking at all these layers of things and they're coming up with nothing. Just a big fat nothing. And then January 9th, 2018 comes around.
Ugh, okay.
And 70 miles away from where Jamie was taken in Barron, Wisconsin, a 911 call was placed to dispatch in a rural town named Gordon.
Okay.
Jean Nutter. Nutter, I hardly know her. Anyway, I knew you were going to do that.
Damn it, you took my joke. Oh.
So Jean was actually walking her dog outside. It was freezing out, but she's like, gotta walk my dog. So she's walking her dog.
Well, it's also the Midwest, so it probably wasn't that cold.
It was freezing. It was probably like really windy.
Yeah, it was probably really windy. And with the wind chill, it was probably like negative 20. But babe, we've had negative 40. So this is fucking tropics. Okay.
Well, anyway, she's walking this dog in this tropical 30 degree weather. And she actually saw a young girl walking kind of toward her. So she's like, that's weird. And then she's kind of gets closer to the girl and she's like, she looks kind of dazed, kind of out of it. And she was wearing a sweatshirt, but she didn't have a jacket on. She didn't have appropriate winter clothing for the really cold weather. So that was kind of like distracting.
Right.
And I think she was wearing men's shoes that were way too big for her. So she's like, that is also kind of odd. And so she gets closer to her and the girl comes up to her and she said, my name is Jamie.
Oh.
And I was taken by Jake Patterson and he killed my parents.
Somebody better let James know that there's an asshole out here pretending to be him.
She told this woman that Jake Patterson kept her hidden in his cabin.
Oh.
And she just wanted to go home.
Oh.
Jean recognized her from the news coverage. Because you couldn't be, I mean, even though this was 70 miles away from where it happened, that didn't matter.
No.
But 70 miles away.
That's a long
drive. You don't expect to find her there.
It's also like,
it's like an hour and a half.
At what point in, you know, being abducted are you like, huh, we're still driving.
We'll get there. We'll talk about it. I promise.
Okay.
So Jean recognizes Jamie immediately. And there's a lot of J names, I know. Jamie, James, Jake, Jean. Stay with me.
Jean from State Farm.
Correct.
Okay.
So Jean kind of sees her and she's like, that's Jamie Kloss from the news. And Jamie's like, yeah, I'm Jamie Kloss. And so Jamie's kind of like, oh, you know who I am, you know, because she introduces herself and Jean's like, I know that. I know.
Right.
And she's kind of like, oh, how do you know who I, like, she didn't know that she was as
everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. That it was as televised as it was. Well, it just so happens that Jean Nutter was actually a social worker.
Yes, Jean.
And in seeing Jamie, she said her instincts set in and she just knew that she had to keep her calm, but get her to safety.
Yeah.
So Jean didn't want to take Jamie to her own cabin. And it wasn't because she was afraid, but it was because because Jean's cabin and Jake's cabin, their land, I think, actually met, like, in the back. And so it was very close to where she was just held captive. And she's like, if he's going to go looking for her, he's going to
look close.
And I don't want to leave her there. So instead of taking her to her cabin, she actually went a few doors down and knocked on a neighbor's door, the home of Kristen and Peter Kosinska's.
Okay.
And they lived a few doors down again. And so they knock and they let them in. They let a neighbor in, this girl that they've probably think looks familiar for some reason, but they don't quite know why. So immediately they called the police and dispatch was like, are you sure it's her? Is it really her? Does it look like her? Do you know who it is? And she's like, oh yeah,
it's her.
Like, this is the girl from the pictures. This is all of that. And so Jean was sitting with her and Kristen and Peter actually called 911. So like, they're like, you know, they were probably just having their tea something.
Like,
and the missing girl's right now back in their living room. Yeah. You know, so they kind of like get her anything she needs, make sure she's okay.
Get you a hot cocoa, a cheese platter. You want the fucking Packers on. Like,
and so, well, the thing was, is like, Jean went into professional mode. So she's kind of like talking her through it and kind of keeping her calm. I think she wanted to be maternal, but she's like, no, I need to be professional. Like, I need to put on my work hat, basically, and help this girl.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you are a social worker and you know about crisis intervention. And when the crisis itself was just including the loss of a maternal figure, that might not be a helpful way to keep things moving in a positive direction.
Right. And so she kind of delegated, like, you call the police, you do this, and like, I'm going to sit with her.
You call 911, you get an AED, you bring the cheese.
Correct.
Yeah.
Pretty much the order of events. Yep.
As it should be.
Police were actually there in minutes.
Oh my gosh, we love Wisconsin police time.
So I don't know how they're able to do this. They're well-staffed, well-paid. I don't know what it is, but dang, they're doing pretty good. So they got there, and as soon as they had eyes on her and confirm it was her and she was okay, they called family.
Good.
So they let all of the family that had been out searching for her.
Oh, and I'm so glad. Also, I'm so glad that they didn't call first.
Because if it wasn't her, it's like,
how awful.
What an awful roller coaster to be on. It's
well,
just
good.
Awful.
I'm glad they're working on best practices. That's awesome.
Yes. So Jamie was alive and well, and she was going to be okay.
Okay.
Jamie. Ugh. But she'd spent 88 days.
Oh.
88. 88. Not just 8. 88.
And also holidays.
Yes. With the person who killed her parents and stole her away.
Oh, man. Okay.
So they're interviewing her. They're asking her questions. And she gave the description of the car that she was taken away in because she had obviously seen it and gave all of that information to law enforcement. And they pretty much pulled him over immediately because she knew the name. Oh, she knew the kind of car. I mean, he literally lived like up the road. He hadn't gotten far. So they pull him over. He's 21 years old.
Ugh.
Again, Jake Patterson. She had the name correct. And he was arrested without incident. He admitted to everything with no hesitation.
The fuck?
So with Jamie safe and taken by her aunt Jennifer, who had been her babysitter for the first 12 years of her life and loved her like a daughter, and with Jake Patterson in custody, more information came out.
Okay. Ugh, I'm so stressed. Okay.
So, the Kloss family didn't recognize photos of Jake Patterson. They'd never heard his name before. They didn't think that they'd seen him. they couldn't really distinguish a connection at first glance, and factually they would not have been able to.
Okay.
Because there was no connection.
Ugh.
Which is terrifying in and of itself, because yeah. When you try to unpack these cases, you try to figure out, okay, why, how, where's the connection? Obviously these two people are connected by something. What is that something? And normally when you find that something, you have a lead,
right?
That's your starting point. That's where you go. That's where you move from. But when there is nothing, you don't have a lead.
No, there's no string to pull to unravel the fucking scarf. It's just a random ass guy.
So the fact was, Jake had been driving one morning and he stopped behind a school bus. You know, you see it slow down and the stop sign pops up. Okay. You know how most of us dread and are like, geez, can I fucking pass this thing somewhere? Like, I don't want to stop every other block.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be late to work kind of thing. Well, Jake didn't think that. Nay, nay. He kind of enjoyed watching the kids come out. And actually, where he was stopped, he watched Jamie leave her house and get on the bus. So he knew exactly where she lived, because he didn't just see her get off a bus and start walking. She left her front door, went down the steps, hopped on that bus, and he watched the whole thing. And for some reason, this sighting of her, this view of her, he said, that's the one I'm going to take her.
Ew! Did he have any plans to take a child before he saw her?
Not that we know of, but he just saw her and he made up his mind. And getting stuck behind a school bus is like, you know, depending on the timing, again, a slight inconvenience for a lot of us. But this was life-altering for Jake.
Ew.
When he saw her, he said he knew he had to have her.
Ew.
He had actually gone to the Kloss house twice before the actual attack, but he was deterred by noise inside the house and he got nervous and he ran off. So he, on his third try going to the house, he just said, fuck it. And that's when he went in like the tactical gear with the gun. Like, he had approached the house before, I think, empty handed.
I hate him.
So he basically like went up, got scared, ran away, went up, got scared, ran away. And then on the third time he was like, fuck it. And he suited up and like stormed the house. So this wasn't a one-off kind of spur of the moment thing.
Right. This was not impulse.
Nearly rehearsed, and he was spooked. He didn't want to get caught. He wanted to get away with it. Initially, I think his goal was to kind of like grab her and leave.
Okay.
But when he had gotten spooked the first two times, he got frustrated and he's like, fuck this. Next time when I go, I'll kill whoever's in there.
Oh my God. He did not. Okay. This is just for fucking nothing.
Just for nothing. This was, I hate him. Was just because he wanted her and he knew that they wouldn't let him have her, obviously.
This is what happens. And sorry, this is going to sound like I'm an 80-year-old man, because fuck it, I am. This is what happens when people just get whatever the fuck they want all the time with mm-hmm. no consequences.
Correct. Or
like, what makes you think that you are entitled to that?
Or the inverse of that, which is, I've never gotten anything, and so in order to get something, I need to take it.
Right.
And so this is what I'm going to take.
It's like, have you ever just, and just the blatant disregard for human life. And frankly, if he cared about her as a human and not as an object, which obviously if he has to have her, he's objectified her already.
Correct.
But like, you'd think that you might actually do better if you're not hurting the people around her.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Oh, I hate his ass. Sorry. Keep going. It just, ugh.
He even said that he was on a mission to kill anybody in the house. But what he didn't know is that Jamie was an only child. Had she not been, and had there been other kids in the house, he walked into that house knowing that anybody other than her walks out, I'm killing them. So if there was another child, if she had siblings, those siblings would have been killed, because he had his eyes set on one person and one person only, and anybody that stood in the way of that was going down.
And the fact that... Ugh. All right, sorry. I'm going to keep repeating the same thing because I'm so pissed off. So.
I know. But they had locks on their doors and they had a pretty safe neighborhood, and a lot of people felt comfortable there and safe there. And so did the Kloss family. And then this monster comes up And regardless, whether they had every security system, whether they had like 10 deadbolts, he wanted in the house. He was making it in the house. And that's what's, there's many very terrifying things about this. One, to me, is the randomness of it. You saw her get on a bus and then you decided to annihilate her family.
Classic.
But then also, he was so hell-bent on getting her, he didn't wait for her to leave for school the next day or so. He was hell-bent on breaching that door. He was going to get in that house, and so, it probably didn't matter what that family had in place to protect themselves. He was going to make it through it.
Right, because obviously he didn't care if he got caught.
Which is so terrifying.
So are you telling me that all three of these attempts were on the same fucking night?
No, these were different days.
Okay.
But that's even worse, because he actually went home, slept on it, woke up the next morning, said, yeah, I'm going to try that again. Right. And then went and actually, I don't know, fucking did it.
Oh, God. Let me... Ugh. Okay.
So, Jake approached. He killed James. He found Jamie. He taped her hands and ankles together, and he killed Denise in front of her.
I hate him.
Essentially, this means that Denise watched him tie, like, basically tape up Jamie mm-hmm. before she was killed. So she knew that her daughter was being taken with this man. So in her final moments on Earth, she knew her husband was killed, she was going to die, and that her kid was being prepared to be taken away.
Right. Oh, God.
That is nightmare fuel. I don't know how else you could describe that.
I'm already afraid of it. I'm already having a nightmare.
After Jake had killed both James and Denise and had Jamie in his car, he simply drove away. He drove 20 seconds down the road when he heard the sirens and saw the blue lights of the cruisers heading toward the crime scene.
Oh my gosh, he was that close?
Yeah, they were there in minutes. They were there in like 3 minutes.
Oh my God.
There was no time, so he was on the road. And so while they're gunning it toward the crime scene...
He's gunning it away.
No. The crazy thing is he followed the law. He didn't draw attention to himself. He saw the blue lights. He put on his blinker. He pulled over, let them pass.
Right. Well, that's the thing.
Yeah, so he wasn't suspicious at all, because if he had just been like, fuck it, I need to get out of here, he would have drawn attention to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them would have looped around and followed. That is how close they were to Jamie. And even with that excellent response time, doing everything they could, following every tip, there were no tips to get. There was no way to catch him.
No. How can...
When he got her to his cabin, he gave her a pair of his sister's pajamas to change into.
At least there's that.
He actually had this cabin to himself. I don't know if it was something that his parents owned that they let him be in, or if this was his cabin. I think it was his cabin.
How old is he again?
21.
Okay.
I didn't get the sense that it was very large, but it was something that it was his. And when you're a single person,
that's important.
If you didn't guess, he doesn't have a girlfriend.
Well, I would assume if he did before, he sure shit didn't know. So,
correct. So this was enough space, you know, just for him and everything. And he slept on a twin bed, and he made her sleep under the bed.
Ugh.
So he'd have her get under the bed, and then he blocked her in with bins that had weights in them so he'd know if they were moved. Okay. So she couldn't get out from under the bed without it waking him up. And she'd have to kind of struggle because it was really heavy, and she was like having to lay down flat. So she couldn't exactly get momentum and like get an angle right where she could really heave it away, you know? You know.
Yeah.
Eventually, though, she slept in the same bed as him because he made her. He lived in this cabin in Gordon, Wisconsin, alone, but he had regular visits from family. Every Saturday, like clockwork, his dad visited for a few hours.
Okay.
And she knew, Jamie knew, because Jake had told her on Saturdays, because of this arrangement they had, you go under the bed and you stay silent. So he had visits with family at his own house. He kept his bedroom door closed. She knew not to dare make a noise, and they didn't walk in his bedroom, because why would you? You're in the living room, you're hanging out, you don't need to go snooping around.
Oh, that makes me so angry.
She was on the other side of that door. For 12 hours at a time, she would have to stay flat on the ground, unable to really move, without light, without anyone to talk to, living in fear, with no bathroom.
Well, and I guess my, like, the thing that sticks out to me is, what the fuck did he have to do to her for her to actually comply with that? For her to be like, no, okay, all right, fine.
Do you really want to know?
No, I really don't want to fucking know, but I know I'm going to find out.
Well, too bad, I'm going to tell you, but here's the thing. He did nothing. She was just so scared. He didn't say he was going to kill her. And throughout this whole thing, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, there's no sexual assault.
That's even crazier. Which, don't get me wrong, I'm so fucking happy that right, there's but no,
when,
but like...
But when I read that, I'm thinking, in my mind, knowing that she survived, I was like, what did he do to her while he had her? 88 days and she's in his home? He never touched her. Now, that doesn't mean that he wasn't going to.
No, and the other piece too, I guess, for me is like, I hadn't automatically assumed. I assumed at some point, probably, if he saw her on a bus and was like, oh my gosh, my lucky day.
But right, like, that's exactly what your mind goes to. As awful as that is, you imagine that there has to be some form of attraction there. Why you did this in the first place, but he literally just took her to have her.
And then to like have her sleep under your bed, which is weird. Because it also in my mind, and like maybe this is just the hyperfixation ADHD shit in me. But like if I'm interested in an object, which I'm saying because he's treating her like an object, mm-hmm. not a human being. If I'm interested in an object or like a pet.
Mm-hmm.
My initial response is not to, like, A, annihilate their fucking family and take them. No. But mm-hmm. if you're going to then obtain that object or pet, to, like, give it the best life it could have. So, like, here, do you want toys? Do you want this? Like, we'll get you this. Like, and not, like, sleep under my bed. And then after the sleep under my bed, to be like, you're going to sleep in my bed and to have no sexual assault is fucking astounding.
Oh, yeah. And so we'll get into it, I promise.
Okay. Sorry, I hate him.
No, you absolutely okay. should. I'd be surprised if you were like, you know what? He's not that bad.
You guys, I'm literally doodling fucking guy with the fiery pits of hell underneath it, so.
It's true. I can confirm that. And, if you haven't watched What We Do in the Shadows, that's where that's from, and you should also do that. But anyway, there were several hours at a time where she was there without food, water, couldn't make a sound, couldn't use the bathroom, couldn't talk to anybody, couldn't see in front of her face, just alone with her thoughts and, more importantly, her fears. She was told that if she did make a sound, quote, very bad things would happen. Mm. And he was purposefully not descriptive of what that would mean so that her imagination would do the rest.
Right.
Like, what is very bad things? Well, bad things have already happened. How much worse can it, you know? And so if he didn't give a description, her mind would fill in the blanks. And he relied on that.
Already seen this fucker kill her mom and her dad in mm-hmm. front of her. So like, it's not like she thinks they're empty threats.
No, she doesn't think he's bluffing, but she also doesn't know what would happen.
Right. Because he didn't walk in and say, okay, I'm going to do a very bad thing to your mom.
He'd even allow her to walk outside in the yard for a few minutes.
Oh.
So he let her out, like, and I know,
quote unquote, out. Yeah.
It's like a pet, but it's like he literally allowed her within his eyesight to walk around outside to get fresh air and go back inside. But he didn't have any extra locks on the doors. He didn't have any other means of keeping her in the home other than scaring her into compliance. So when you say, what did he do to her, or what happened, why did she stay? It was because she was terrified. He relied on her fear, and he instilled that fear, but he didn't give significant threats or...
Right, he wasn't doing extra bodily harm to her, but that's just, it's still so shitty. Oh, God.
And again, there's no reported sexual assault. It's reported that his fantasy was rooted in sexual desire, but he felt too guilty to assault her after killing her parents.
Well, fucking good.
That's what he... However, I don't believe that. I think he would have done it eventually. He just hadn't gotten there yet. But he was a very slow mover with this stuff. Like, it was sleep under the bed, don't do anything. And then it was sleep in the bed with me. And then it was, you can have a few minutes outside. They'd watch movies together. obviously it's not her choice, but when they were watching TV and, you know, her case would come on, he would change the channel because, like, you couldn't watch TV without seeing it. So he would just switch it off.
Right.
So she would see her own face and her parents' pictures and headlines about her on TV.
And then it would be ripped away.
But then he would turn it off and that would be it. So I think that there's, I don't know if he got off on like the mental gymnastics, the mental torture that he put her through. I think he was just working up to a sexual assault. And I think that was the main goal, but that's my speculation.
Well, and I'd agree because
he's like, I wanted to, but I just felt bad for killing her parents. So I figure he had like a timer on when he wouldn't feel as bad anymore.
Right. Like, oh, enough time has passed. You must be done with your grief, right?
Correct.
I think part of what makes me think that he probably would have is also included in that this is obviously like his first time anything with this, at least level, especially if we can see from like the times that he's gone up to her house and left. Like, it's not like he has an arsenal of tools that he knows how to get around these things mm-hmm. with. And typically, when we see like escalation in people's crimes, yes, part of that is learning what you want and how to do it better. But also, a lot of it is the cognitive dissonance of like convincing yourself that what you're doing is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got through that first part fucking easy peasy.
Oh, yeah.
So if all we're waiting on is the cognitive dissonance to say this is okay, well, hell, now she's sleeping in his bed. She gets to be outside. She's fine. I can do this. Oh, I hate him. Sorry. I'm not going to stop screaming that. I hate this fucker.
As you should. As you should. And don't worry. It's going to get worse.
Good.
On the day she escaped, he had told her that he was going to be gone for a few hours. Which, I don't know that this was the first time that it happened. My gut tells me it was, because she kind of saw the opportunity and took it.
Right.
Maybe he would leave, but he wouldn't tell her how long he'd be away before. But this time he said that he would be gone a few hours and that she was to go under the bed. So she did that and he secured her in place with the bins and the weights and everything. But as soon as she heard him leave, she was like, fuck this. This might be my only chance that I have. And she got herself out. She put on a pair of his shoes and she just walked. She left. Again, no extra locks. It's not like he had cameras. He didn't have motion sensors. He didn't have anything hooked up to his phone that he could see. He relied on her being afraid. And on the 88th day, she was like, I can't.
Good.
And she got out. And that's where she ran into Jean.
Okay.
And Jean happened to be late walking her dog that day. She normally did it earlier, but as fate would have it, sometimes they happen exactly as they're meant to.
I love
and
that.
Jamie was saved.
Good.
So if Jean hadn't been out walking her dog, who knows if he would have doubled back and seen her walking. She didn't have anywhere to go.
Right.
But what's so troubling about this case is not only that it was senseless and horrifying, but it was also unpredictable, random, crazed, and pretty much untraceable. There was no link at all between Jamie and Jake. There weren't records. There wasn't any social media posts, no conversation, nothing. Nobody knew him. He wasn't local. He didn't live there. He wasn't a family friend. They didn't have each other on Snapchat. They didn't follow each other on Instagram. They didn't belong to the same Facebook group.
Right.
There was no dotted line between their names other than the fact that he stopped behind her school bus one day in October. That was it. Untraceable.
Well, and then how, as investigators, do you find anything? It's astounding that she was found, not because of their lack of effort. In fact, they had, like, abnormally impressive efforts.
But it wouldn't have mattered. They were never going to find her.
You can pour as many hours as you want looking in the bottom of the ocean, not knowing that what you're looking for is a fucking eagle. You know what I mean?
Like, she was 70 miles away. And while they had the support of everybody in the community, I mean, really, again, it's incredible the way that things came together. But that was pretty much all for nothing when you really think of it, because there was no way they could have linked the two. The only thing that could possibly have happened is what did happen.
Right.
She got herself out, or his family member
found her,
saw her, she made a noise, something.
And decided to actually be decent and
helpful. Oh, his family are beside them. Like, we'll talk good. About them.
Okay.
They had no idea, and they're just complete shock. Like, it was staggering for them to learn what he did. And we'll talk a little bit, again, we'll talk a little bit about it later. But the way that these families were sort of both tormented by him, yeah. his family and hers. But also, again, just the way that, where the fuck did this come from? Nobody expected that from him, but nobody expected anybody to harm the Gloss family. So it was just right. all of these different things where it was like, you know, when you're investigating, you start with the people closest and you work your way out. And you think enemies, business partners, affair partners, jealous family, anything. But Jake didn't fit any of these boxes.
Right.
And when we, as we always do on the pod, consider what might have made the difference, what we can learn, how we prevent this from happening again, I have more question marks than answers. He was getting in that house. He was committed to that. He didn't care who he hurt. He didn't care about getting caught. There was no bargaining with him, pleading or changing his mind. He wasn't antagonized or led on. He wasn't, you know, catfished. He wasn't plotting revenge. It was just he saw her. He wanted her. He wasn't even a blip on their radar.
Right.
And he was already in their house. Like, by the time they knew something was wrong, he'd already killed somebody. That was it.
Ugh.
While Jake was incarcerated in the jail, he was talkative.
Good.
He didn't hide anything. He appeared remorseful. But he actually received a letter from a reporter named Lou Ragus.
Okay.
From, it's K-A-R-E 11. I don't know if it's CARE 11, whatever, but it was a like local reporter agency, whatever.
Okay.
Lou had written Jake believing that there was a slim to none chance he'd respond.
Right.
But Jake actually did answer. And Lou had sent him questions, like several questions, and said, like, question, like, you know, here are the things I'd like you to answer if you could. Do you mind?
Right.
Just thinking, like, hey, it's a shot in the dark. Why he's going to get right. mail. He's got a shit ton of time. Maybe he'll answer. Well, he did. So I'm going to read a few of those responses here. So Jake wrote, Lou, hi, IDK if I'll actually send this. I know. Sorry. I'll answer some of your questions, some I can't. And then he like scribbled shit out. I won't put a lot of details anyway. And then he repeats the question. So the question that Lou asked was, why did you confess when you were caught? And why did you confess in such detail? His response was, I knew when I was caught, which I thought would have happened a lot sooner, I wouldn't fight anything. I tried to give them everything. I tried to give them everything so they didn't have to interview Jamie. They did anyways and hurt her more for no reason.
Brother.
I know. I know.
Okay.
Then what is your plan now? Plead guilty or take the case all the way to trial? And he responded, plead guilty. I want Jamie and her relatives to know that. I don't want them to worry about a trial. He was asked, do you have any remorse or regrets for the things that you did? He answered, huge amounts. I can't believe I did this. The next question, I know. The next question was, did you confide in anyone or leave any hints that people failed to pick up on? And he said, no. When asked when he knew he wanted to do this, he said, the cop said I planned this thoroughly and that I said that. They're really good at twisting your words around, put them in different spots, straight up lie. Little mad about that. Trying to cover up their mistakes, I guess. This was mostly on impulse. I don't think like a serial killer. I'm like, okay. He also wrote...
Also, how do you know what they think like?
Right? Mm-hmm. But he also wrote, no one will believe or can even imagine how sorry I am for hurting Jamie this much. I can't express it. And then on the back of the letter, he wrote, I'm sorry, Jamie, for everything. I know it doesn't mean much.
You're right about that. I mean, I'm glad that you said it, but...
So then in court, Jake's dad could be seen sobbing uncontrollably, needing to be comforted by family and excusing himself on several occasions from the courtroom. Reports said that his mom was devastated and couldn't believe what happened. She didn't have words. Jake's grandfather was quoted as saying, "Something went terribly wrong. Nobody had any clues. We are absolutely heartbroken. It's wretching to deal with."
Also, I just feel so bad for them knowing now that obviously she was there when they were there. Mm-hmm. And like, it's not like they could do anything to make that better. They didn't know, but that is its own kind of torture to have to deal with.
The grandfather also said he was shy and quiet. He backed off from crowds, but a nice boy, polite. Computer games were more of his priority than social interaction.
Yeah.
Jody Arnold, who's Denise's cousin, only found out the details of what happened at court. So many of the family members, they didn't know where Jamie was during this happening. So right. It was only when they interviewed Jamie and interviewed Jake that they were able to piece together everything. And a lot of time had passed between when this happened and when court happened. Again, luckily, Jake wasn't pleading not guilty. He wasn't lying. So things could be fairly quick moving.
But that still doesn't make it a snap your fingers process.
Right. And so the family sitting in the courtroom thinking like they already knew everything. And then all of this new stuff comes to light. And so you have to grieve again.
Right.
For what you didn't know happened. And her cousin said, quote, "Denise's last thoughts were probably my daughter is next. And it makes me so heartbroken. It just wrecks me. When somebody dies, it feels like there's a million, it feels a million times worse when their last thoughts are of utter despair or terror. I had been hoping it had happened so fast that it wasn't time for her to understand. I lock my doors at night, but that's not good enough if somebody wants in. She did everything she could. They were barricaded in the bathroom hiding. Yes, I will die for my kids, but then you realize that doesn't mean my kids are going to be okay.
Right.
When you're in your house, you do feel safe. That guy had a mission and there was nothing stopping that. Mothers everywhere are feeling extra protective of their kids." And it's true. It's like, yeah, I'd give my life for my kid, but does my dying actually protect them? Or now
am I out of, alone?
Now am I out of the way so that my kid can also be harmed?
Right.
You know, so it's like, yeah, you'd give your life, but that doesn't mean that your kid's safe. Right. That doesn't mean that it was for their protection.
Or that it achieves that. Usually it's for that, but does it actually hit the goal?
Right. Jamie actually wrote a victim impact statement.
Good.
Ugh. And also, luckily, she didn't read it herself.
What a brave kid.
I know. She just seems like a cool kid. I mean, truly like a cool kid, too.
Yeah.
Her attorney actually read the statement on her behalf. Good. Prior to Jake's sentencing. So I'm actually going to play you a recording of the statement because I could read it for you, but I think it's more touching coming from the person who read it in court.
Yeah.
Who knew Jamie, with the family in the room, the weight of it, it carries a different weight.
Judge, this is the statement of Jamie Kloss.
Okay.
"Last October, Jake Patterson took a lot of things that I love away from me. It makes me the most sad that he took away my mom and my dad. I loved my mom and dad very much. And they loved me very much. They did all they could to make me happy and protect me. He took them away from me forever. I felt safe in my home, and I loved my room and all of my belongings. He took all of that too. I don't want to even see my home or my stuff because of the memory of that night. My parents and my home were the most important things in my life. He took them away from me in a way that will always leave me with a horrifying memory. I have to have an alarm on the house now just so I can sleep. I used to love to go out with my friends. I loved to go to school. I loved to do dance. He took all of those things away from me too. It's too hard for me to go out in public. I get scared and I get anxious. These are just ordinary things that anyone like me should be able to do, but I can't because he took them away from me. But there are some things that Jake Patterson can never take from me. He can't take my freedom. He thought that he could own me, but he was wrong. I was smarter. I watched his routine, and I took back my freedom. I will always have my freedom, and he will not. Jake Patterson can never take away my courage. He thought he could control me, but he couldn't. I feel like what he did is what a coward would do. I was brave, and he was not. He can never take away my spirit. He thought that he could make me like him, but he was wrong. He can't ever change me or take away who I am. He can't stop me from being happy and moving forward with my life. I will go on to do great things in my life, and he will not. Jake Patterson will never have any power over me. I feel like I have some power over him because I get to tell the judge what I think should happen to him. He stole my parents from me. He stole almost everything I loved from me. For 88 days, he tried to steal me, and he didn't care who he hurt or who he killed to do that. He should stay locked up forever. Judge, those are the words of Jamie Kloss, and it's been my privilege to deliver them to you.
Thank you.
Oh my God, what a badass.
I know. Abby's crying.
No, I'm almost crying.
Damn
it, I cried by saying that. Okay, I'm okay. That is amazing. What a cool kid.
She is so resilient. She has so much love around her. So to end this on the only positive note I know how is that she is with family.
Good.
And that girl is so loved, so deeply cared about. I mean, to them, she is their miracle. They loved her. They loved her family, her parents. But yeah. Also, they know she fought to live. She's the reason she got out.
Yeah.
And they were probably prepared or somehow trying to wrap their mind around being prepared to be told that she is dead.
Right.
And after the first 48 hours, you're almost sure of it?
Yeah.
What's 88 days?
How do you go to bed 88 times and keep that hope?
How do you sleep at all? And so they had no idea that they would see her again. And not only did they see her again, but they saw her intact. Okay. Yeah. She made it out. And she got herself out.
Obviously not untouched by all of this, but in one of the better case scenarios you can have for someone who's been abducted and stolen for 88 days.
No doubt what she went through for those 88 days was horrific.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful that ways to make it more vile, he didn't take that approach.
Right.
Again, I'm not giving him credit because I 100% believe he would have gotten there. He even said, he was like, I'm surprised I didn't get caught sooner. Like, this is, you know, but it was like, how could they? So he was just like, yeah, for as long, he was going to have her for life. Like,
if this could, yeah.
This, that was his plan. He was not giving her up. And so the family, listening to interviews with them, it's very sweet because they're like, you know, we ask her if we can hug her and we give her the biggest hugs and she has support, she has therapy, she can talk about it when she wants to. Like, they have rallied around her give her everything that they possibly can. And she was so close with this family beforehand that it isn't like, oh, I'm just going to go live with, like, my aunt that I'm not very close with. I saw on Christmas, like, maybe 10 years ago.
Right. It's not like a series of unfortunate events where it's her, like, long-lost third-removed cousin on her dad's great-uncle's side.
Right.
Right.
So those connections were already there, and those connections became so much more important.
Wow.
The company that her parents worked for had posted that $25,000 reward, right? For any information to bring her home. And instead of keeping that money, and they could have, they opted to award that money to her for saving herself.
Wow.
Like, she led to her own rescue, that essentially.
Is an awesome action on that.
So, does $25,000 make a dent in the pain that she's feeling? Of course not. There's no monetary value that you can assign to that. But I think it's pretty cool that they were like, you did this, and that's what this was for, and this is for you. And I think that that's pretty cool. They felt it was the least they could do.
Well, and you know, I'm not normally one to be like, well, it is, but it is. Like, she just went through hell. And don't get me wrong, I know that they are a company and they really only have to look out for themselves. But the people that made her were two of their longest term employees.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that they lost, they knew not as intimately as your family, but really intimately. You spent there 27 so years. Much time.
Yeah.
Even if you work somewhere for 3 years, you spend 40 hours at work. Most of the time, that's more than you see some people in your own family.
And I think it was such a small kind of network, like a small little area. Where, like, if you work for this major corporation, mm-hmm. you're not going to know all your coworkers. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they worked at, like, this little store that you work there that long, that closely with people. They know you quite well.
Yeah.
Jamie was also awarded a Hometown Hero Award for her strength and resilience, which was extremely sweet. And today she advocates for other missing and exploited kids.
Wow.
Her family loves her more than anything. She has a ton of healing to do, as you would expect. But her family rallies around her to support her and uplift her and love her through all of what is ahead.
Wow.
And so today she is healing and she is loved. And I don't have any other words, because normally I try to reflect and say, okay, here, what can we learn? What could we do? You know, we try to find something. It has to be for something, right?
You can't with this one.
But this was so random. And, you know, like, you look at, you know, our Ted Bundy series, all of them were so random. It was like, if he knew them at all,
right,
he couldn't kill them, right? Because it was like, shit, I know you. But at least, oh, you might have spotted his car. You might have spotted the guy on crutches. Like, over time, there were little nuggets of things that you could kind of track together. If you knew what you were looking for, you might actually get a lead. And with this, it's like, there was no guy with crutches. There was, like, no one. Yeah, he was stopped behind her just like every other car. Right. He would have gotten pulled over if he didn't stop for that bus. Right. Like, he behaved within the law at that time when he saw her. And right, he killed the two other people that were witnesses. That was it.
And, you know, I say this not to lighten the pain or the suffering that she went through. And it's not to say that this experience has to be anything other than part of her story. But when we talk about, like, the things we can learn and what these things might be for, if we think about what these things are for, if she wants to help kids, I mean, God, what better person to do it?
What better way to relate to and help? And she's become an advocate and she's used her voice,
which is huge. So many people don't even report crimes because they're afraid to use their voice, let alone are the reason that they got out of that situation and can say, hey, here's what worked for me. And I know that what worked for her, what we're talking about right now, is in that moment of what worked in the trauma and in the crisis. But really, I guess if I have any hope in this story, it's that Jamie is able to do a lot of that healing, do a lot of that processing and healing, because that is the person that the next kid needs. It's not someone to say, oh, baby, it's okay, you're home now, don't worry about it. It's someone to say, like, fuck yeah, I get it. Those nightmares are shit.
Exactly.
Here's what I do.
Yes.
And so, you know, this is not to make it some sort of social work nugget or whatever, but it's just one of those things that if it's going to be for anything, it's going to be for what she's willing to use this trauma for. And it's still trauma and it's still ass. But hell, I mean, the the 13 or even 14 year old who wrote that letter in court is more mature than most of the adults I know.
So, correct. Oh, yeah.
No doubt. I hope nothing but good things for her and her family. They all deserve some fucking peace after all this.
And she got back into dance again?
Yes, queen!
And she got back into school activities that she had really... So, over time, because it's been a few years now, and right. she's gotten older, you know, she's been able to sort of re-go into... She's, like, being reacquainted with a lot of the things that she had enjoyed before.
Right, her passions and...
And unfortunately, this happened before COVID, and then she had fucking COVID lockdown pandemic and that, where then you're, like, isolated again. And so, you know, I'm hopeful. I didn't want to dig too much on, like, where she is. Like, this moment, she, right. you know, she needs to be able to do that. But it's, like, who better to speak on helping kids and, you know... what she's likely dealing with, even though none of this is her fault.
No. And again, you know, we talk about all of the things we can do. We white knuckle, like, cling desperately to any semblance of, like, a positive or a lesson that we can learn from these things. So in the event that anybody is hearing this, or even if Jamie is hearing this and thinks that we're saying this is a right now thing, hell the fuck not. This is a when you're ready, when you feel comfortable, when you feel good about where you're at and feeling like you can use this. Because otherwise, this is just picking at the scab. You know, let it heal first as much as you can. I mean.
Yeah. So I'm happy that she's been able to do the things that brought her peace before, and that those things can still continue to bring her peace. And ultimately, she's got family that are... so in her corner.
Oh, dude, the dance she's gonna do is gonna be so beautiful.
So that is the Kloss family killings, I guess. Jamie Kloss's abduction. An incredible survival story.
Yeah.
She saved her own life despite all of law enforcement's efforts. They didn't bring her home. She did.
Fuck buying yourself flowers. I can save my own damn life. What the?
I would take her. We'd go get dinner.
Oh.
We'd go see a movie. We'd be BFFs.
Hell yeah. We'd go see the fucking Rockettes. Are you kidding?
Just what a fucking cool kid. Regardless of this shit. Close with her mom. Dancer. Into, like, arts and stuff. Are you kidding me? That was me, man.
Yep.
We would have been besties.
Girl, you got a spot at this table. That's all we do here.
I know. So, I will leave you with that.
Well, just, again, as a reminder to anybody listening to this who might need that help, or to anybody who might need the reminder, there is always a family that loves you here. So, if you want to check out the people, the places, the things that we talk about, the pod pets that we have as the ATFTC fam, if you want to look at resources, reprieves, we have so much, not only for mental health resources, but also in terms of causes and things that families hold near and dear to their heart that victims might want put out there. We try to do it all. You are welcome to find that on our Instagram page. That is at About Time for True Crime Pod, with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period TIME period FOR period TRUE period CRIME period POD, because podcast was too long. But if you like podcast, wanted to send something too long, wanted to tell us how fucking cool Jamie is, even though we already know we love the camaraderie, you can do that to our email. But Allie, where would they email us?
So if you wanted to send us an email, you would do that to abouttime4tc@gmail.com. So that's ABOUTTIME, numeric4tc@gmail.com. Thank you. Thank you for hanging out with us. We love you and love to see you. Send us your pod pets. Send us all the things. Rate, review, tell a friend, tell an acquaintance. And we'll see you next time.
Sounds good. We will see you next week, you guys. But if I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye. Dude, I gotta call my therapist.